Hey guys, hey, it's me. Let's first enjoy my wonderful sick voice. I am very sick and I am in New York. Because I have been traveling so much, basically since Sketchfest ended for work, that I have not had time to record a new episode. And as you can tell from my voice, it's probably wouldn't be possible anyway. But we had an idea that I wanted to thank Chris Royce, who runs the Twitter account, and has been helping me a bunch lately. I thought maybe it would be fun to release an older episode that maybe some of you missed, because it might be someone that you're not as aware of, someone you're not as familiar with, but is one of my favorite episodes and is also one of Chris's favorite episodes. So between the two of us, we picked this one. And I hope if you haven't listened to it before, you'll give it a listen. And if you have listened to it, maybe you'll give it a listen again. And just bear in mind that it's one of my favorites. I cannot say enough good things about Kathleen Rose Perkins. She's someone that I never get to see, but remains one of my favorite humans. And I think from this podcast episode, you'll probably see why. Okay, I hope everybody's doing better than I am, and then some. And I'll talk to you soon. Bye.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Guys, this is another long time coming. I've had a couple of those. I've mentioned that I've had a couple of those because this is a town full of busy, successful ladies.
So true.
Whose intentions are always good. And I include my guest and myself when I say that. I'm proud to say that I think our intentions are good. But, you know, there's a lot of back and forth about when is this going to happen. And there's some traveling and scheduling and all that kind of stuff that happens. So I want to say we started talking about you doing my podcast before. It was certainly before I released my podcast, because you were one of the first people I was like, oh, I would love to podcast Kathleen.
Yeah, I think it was.
It's like possible it's been years. A year at least, maybe 2.
I think so. It's over a year. Oh, yeah. Definitely over a year.
Well, yeah. The good news is that I still have a podcast.
You do.
You still have
a life. I'm living.
You're a living human being.
I am. I'm still here. Still
and kicking. And if you've been hanging on by the thread of just wanting to make sure you do my podcast before you go anywhere into the afterlife, I appreciate it.
I can die now. But I will. Like after this,
give
is
me
done, I
give
can
me a
leave
minimum
this world.
Of 55 minutes, and then
you got 55 minutes.
I'll send you on your way.
Go.
Whatever that means. This could either be, this is like around the corner for being the most grim conversation to ever start a podcast, but isn't really, because we're not really saying anything other than that you could die directly after this podcast. And if that happens, that'll make me really famous, because everyone will go, oh my God.
I know.
Did she just kill Kathleen Rose Perkins?
Maybe that would be actually really great for you if I died.
I mean, if you want to put a silver lining on what I consider to be a fairly dark cloud of the world losing you, that would probably be the best thing that came out of it.
Yeah.
It would be a boon to my career as a podcaster, my podcasting career.
I don't even know how to feel right now.
You feel as weird as you should.
I'm going to choose to feel good that you said that. I'm going to feel good about this. Not talking about my death. It's all right. Listen, everybody has to die, and we have to acknowledge that. I don't want to die right now. I don't want to die in an hour. That's okay. For sure. But if I had to, I'm happy with the way it's all gone so far.
I'm just saying we would have a little slice of your personal history laid down in podcast form.
We better make it pretty good.
This is really your memoirs.
Yeah.
Now you got to jam pack every memory you want to be preserved in the annals of history.
In an hour. I can do that.
Get it all out. Let's start with this. I don't know what the name of your African gray parrot is, because I know you were having a conversation about it with someone else before we started recording. I was not privy to some of that conversation because I was in the other room prepping this podcast. So I would love to know the name of your African gray parrot.
His name is Luke. He is 7 years old. And he's special. He's a special little guy.
Have you? There's so much I want to say. First of all, everyone who listens to the podcast knows that my dog's name is Scott. And I know that people are thinking to themselves right now, I want Scott and Luke to be friends because they are such dude names for animals.
It would be kind of cool if Luke could just kind of ride on Scott's head.
I imagine Scott would let that happen.
And just kind of, they could go around together.
Did you have birds growing up? Because birds, this is the thing. I'm not trying to out you as a weirdo because that's definitely weird. Not the case. But we don't know. We as a community of people in this podcast, I mean, you're the first bird owner I've known on the podcast. And I always, when I'm at pet stores, I love birds. I love like colorful finches. In fact, I try to do a bird feeder out here that with special seed just to attract finches. But sure. I think there are so many ravens and hawks in my neighborhood that the finches are like, we're not stupid. We're not going to like, you know, hang out here. So they get bullied. But when I see, when I'm at pet stores and stuff, I see birds and I always think, oh, it'd be fun to have birds. And I was like, I'm not going to have birds. No. I can't have birds.
It's a very specific animal. It's like having a reptile or, you know, some kind of a tarantula,
right.
Spider, all that kind of stuff. It is a little strange. But no, I never had birds when I was growing up. My boyfriend, Christopher Moynihan, my partner of 13 years. It's so weird to say boyfriend because
I know at a certain point you're not dating anymore.
It's not like my boyfriend. It's like
your boyfriend of 13 years.
It sounds weird when I say that.
I know.
I feel like a teenager whenever I say that, but he's more than a boyfriend. So my partner, but when I say partner, then everybody thinks, oh, she's a
Chris
lesbian, which is nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
But I kind of,
at least he goes by Christopher and not Chris. Cause it could be even more ambiguous.
Maybe I should just, because that's kind of the hot thing to be a lesbian right now. So maybe I should just kind of live in that.
I'm trying to think of all
Chris.
The lesbian friends of mine who would be like, listen, it's not that hot to be a lesbian.
It's not.
Right now. It's still a real struggle. We're trying to get a lot of rights established.
No, I think it's pretty cool. I find it very cool.
I find it cool also.
Yeah.
And also not a choice.
Yeah, well, yeah.
But
there's that.
But yeah, so your partner of 13 years.
Yeah,
your male partner of 13 years.
He is from a family of five. I'm from a family of five. So, and all boys on both counts.
Oh, wow.
I'm the only girl in my family. He's the only girl in his family. No, he's one of five boys.
Where
so.
Do you fall in age? Groups.
I'm the last.
You're the baby.
I'm the baby, and he was the middle kid. And they had birds growing up, and so one Memorial Day weekend about 12 years ago, he said, "I want to get you a bird," because I couldn't have a dog or a cat in my apartment that I was in at the time. And he just wanted to kind of lift my spirits because I was down at that particular time in my life. And he said, let's just get a little tiny parakeet or like a cage bird, a little bird from Petco, which is now we know that's really not the way to go. But we didn't know back then. And I walked into this Petco around the corner and saw these lovebirds in a cage. And there were three of them. And now lovebirds... they're called lovebirds because they really kind of, you should only have two or one, because they really bond with one other thing and that's it. So there were three in this particular cage and two of them were like lovebirds. They loved each other. They were so cuddling up and everything. And then the other one would fly from one side of the perch to the other side of the perch. And each time she landed, the one that was next to him would nip at her. And so she was just not accepted in that group. And I was like, I got to get that bird. I don't know anything about birds, but I got to kind of save that bird. I was like, I'm going to save that bird.
Please. I absolutely would too.
Right? And so
I would be like, and I need you to put those two birds to death.
Yeah. Those guys are mean. Yeah. I don't like those guys, but I took that one home and named him George because I thought it was a boy. And I still have George. I have George and Luke. George is my lovebird. I've had her for 12 years. And I found out that she was a girl when she started laying eggs. So now she's Georgia. Georgie.
But she's still George.
George. George. Yeah. Well, but here's, she's a girl.
A bit odd. Regular listeners will know this. Yeah. Regular listeners will know this, but I had two mice when I was a kid and they were both girls and one of them was named George.
There we go. See, full circle.
I know.
We're getting it out.
I know.
I can die at the end of this. And everything's so going to be
so
right.
Good. Yeah. So far, so good.
So far, so good.
So Luke, so I'm fascinated. So Luke, okay, so George is a lovebird and Luke,
and they don't like each other.
And they don't like each other?
They don't like each other.
And do they cohabitate in any kind of way that it doesn't force them to interact in any way?
She stays in my office and he stays in the kitchen and they never, the twain shall meet. Yeah. They never, because he will take her head off. Ooh. And she wants to have babies with them. So there's a whole, and it's very dangerous for birds to lay eggs because they lose a ton of calcium. And so you have to really try and repress that. And if she's around him, she will start laying eggs. And how crazy is that? One day I woke up and found an egg in her cage. And at that time I thought it was his cage. So I was like, oh my gosh, it's a girl. It's a girl. It's not a girl. It's a female.
Yeah.
So it took me about 2 weeks to kind of change my mind, like
That's so interesting. No, I mean, I totally understand. If I suddenly found out Scott was a girl, it's an interesting litmus test and it's an interesting, of course I'm making this political, but like, you know, because there is, you know, one of the people that I podcast on the JV Club is my cousin Julian, who was born female, but who has since transitioned to being male. And, you know, the immediate part of the process when if you're lucky enough to have a family who immediately accepts it or who accepts it gradually, but, you know, does it with love or whatever.
It'll never be immediate.
I guess speaking for my family, we were so on board for it that the what we wanted to do right away was like make his transitioning as easy for him as possible and immediately start referring to him as he and immediately start calling him Julian and not Julie. And we like overdid it, you know what I mean? Because we were trying so hard to sort of be quote like PC about it or however you want to think about it. And
did you have like banners? Still, welcome home, Julian.
Guy,
mister.
You, sir. And, you know, and again, that's coming from a place of us not even being that surprised and us totally embracing it. So even to be like a family member who really struggles with it, but who ultimately loves their, you know, son or daughter and wants to support it, it's still a process. And I think it's such an interesting little microcosm litmus test, just a gender conversation for you, even just to figure that out with a bird and realize this is a little bit of a mind fuck, guys. Yeah. Sorry, you know, I don't say fuck very often, but
might as well. I am for allowed this to one.
Listen.
Gender
listen
stuff.
It doesn't get any more intense than finding out a bird is a she when you thought it was a he.
How appropriate too, because gender is kind of, it comes out of fucking, so
there you go.
Use the word.
Thank
Let's
you.
Let's do this.
I used it in a scientific context. It's 100% justified.
It's always so interesting.
So there was the egg. Yeah, it is. Look at it. It is. You got to keep your birds apart because George wants to.
She wants
make
to have sex.
Eggs,
she rubs her self on the rope that is in. You know, because she's a sexual. She wants to have sex.
And you are keeping her from that.
I'm keeping her from doing that.
Would you ever? But so you would never get a male.
There's guilt.
There's nothing you can do. You can't like spay a bird the way you spay a cat or a dog.
Not really. There are medications I can give her when she started laying eggs. I can give her a medication that would repress that.
And she's lived so long.
Yeah, she's 12 years. They have the lifespan 12 to 15 years. So, and she's a really healthy, sweet little bird who's got plenty of energy. So, she's doing good and she's incredibly sweet. And she's not,
I've got to come over ASAP.
Yeah, you should meet her because she's lovely. All she wants to do is be around people and be close to your face.
Oh my God, I love this.
It's sweet.
I do love birds. You see a lot of birds. Maybe not so much in the den because this is more of a bug room, but
Birds are big right now.
I do love birds.
Like emblems of like embroidered birds are birds are a big deal.
Birds are a big deal.
Everybody's trying to fly.
Well, I'll tell you what. I've loved them. I've always loved them. And I got a lot of birds to show for it. I love quail because I'm from Arizona. And that was always like such a joy, especially getting up in the morning to go to school. I had to take two different buses to get to my magnet school, and Tucson's pretty sprawling. So my elementary school was, you know, probably just at least a half hour drive, maybe longer. And then when you have to go through multiple bus stops and get, you know, you get picked up and then it's like out of the way and the bus route and all that kind of stuff. I'm not even sure what time I had to get up in the morning, but it was like always dark.
Early.
Always dark, yeah. Going to the bus stop. And one of the only perks to that was seeing little families of quail running in the desert and running on the streets in the very early morning. And they are so effing cute. Like little plump, cute mom quail with like six little babies following in a perfect line behind her.
That's great.
Moving as fast as their little tiny legs can carry them. It's pretty adorable.
I don't know what it is about my upbringing, but once you said that, I thought you meant eating quail. I've never eaten quail.
For the reason that I just stated, but I do eat meat, so it's not like, I mean, I guess I eat poultry, I don't eat beef, but.
I was right about to say, oh, I love quails, eggs are great, eggs are fantastic.
But that's okay, quail egg, that's just an egg. I eat eggs.
Do you know what an egg is?
Well, like.
Basically, it's an unfertilized.
Yeah. And some people even eat like fertilized eggs somehow.
It's like a.
Yeah, we're eating a period.
Mm-hmm.
You made
really
the best
nice,
grimace,
neat,
just best grimace, delicious, nutritious,
yolky, creamy
period.
Oh, that's so... All right. Well, whatever. I can die now because I should die now because after this is aired, I'm gonna look like a total sex crazed idiot. I can't stop laughing.
Weirdo. Okay. God, we've covered so much in 15 minutes.
I'm not that strange.
Oh God, I love it. I love that you have a bird. But this is going back to what I was going to say. Well, I guess I didn't know I was going to say it until I had the evidence lying in front of you. But now I feel I have discovered that I'm curious to find someone, and I welcome the listener to send me a tweet. That's good. That's actually very good.
Very appropriate. Tweet,
very appropriate. first of all, I want you to cook yourself up a couple of nice periods. And then when you're satiated, I want you to send me a tweet. But I'm wondering, this is why I asked if you had birds when you were little, because it seems like a thing that is like only if you were raised around pet birds, would you then get a bird?
Well,
and I'm just curious.
Was,
yeah, that's why. Like the fact that you ended up telling me when you said I never had them as a youth, I thought this is fascinating to me because it would never, it seems like a learned behavior to feel comfortable getting a bird. And I wonder who buys birds who never had birds as a kid. And the fact that you said that Christopher had was like, there you go.
That makes sense. It made sense to him. And it was a great alternative to a dog and a cat. And all we had growing up was dogs and cats. So I was like, but the thing is I love animals, any kind of animals.
Love eating animals.
Love eating their periods. I love it. Love it. No, so I always thought of myself as that. Do you remember there was a cartoon that had Tiny Toons or something there was an Elmira character who it was kind of based off of the Lenny character in what's that?
I love them and squeeze them and hold them forever. Of Mice and Men.
Like you just hold.
Yeah. Until you crush it.
Yeah. I'm like that. I cannot get enough of.
Yeah.
Of
how do you feel
animals.
About bunnies? Because speaking of Mice and Men, I am the most like that about rabbits.
Oof.
Just like of Mice and Men, which is to say, I don't want a pet rabbit. I don't have one. I can't. I mean, I couldn't even get a bird now having a dog and a cat. But
have you ever had a pet rabbit?
I've never had a pet bunny. But are you shaking your head? Like, is it bad?
No, that was my
just
first.
Think they're so.
That was my first
They're animal. So tiny, and they're so soft, and their little quivering noses and their big really, eyes.
Really easy to crush.
Ooh, you didn't crush your bunny.
I didn't crush my bunny. I froze it to death, which is great. Yeah.
What happened?
So sad. I had this little bunny, and what it was a rust-colored bunny, so I called her Red. Mm-hmm. She was gorgeous, but my family hated her, and we had this covered porch. But I lived in Michigan. I grew up in Michigan, and the winters are terrible in Michigan, but I think she actually lived through a couple of winters on that porch. She weathered the storm for a couple of years, but man, the third or fourth year, I think... I woke up one morning and just walked out to a hard bunny carcass and it was crushing, oh, dear crushing. God. And I was little, I was like 5 or 6 and my brothers found it utterly hilarious. So it was,
God.
That's so I'll never have another bunny because it was a pretty traumatic experience. Because I felt really guilty about doing that. Like, why didn't I just the winter? What? An animal in a Michigan
poor
winter?
Red. But your parents, I mean, that you were so little. I mean, not to like
it's
put
my
everything on your
fault.
Parents, but to be honest,
it
yeah,
is.
Well, you wouldn't know any different. I mean, you know what your parents tell you is okay or not okay, and
yeah.
If they felt that it was okay for the bunny to be out there, then why would you think otherwise?
Listen, my parents fucked up so much. They really did.
Really? Above and beyond the Red situation. Are they still together?
No, they did it in a really normal capacity, but we're all fucked up in certain ways. We all have our issues.
Are they still
nobody's
together?
A serial killer. Nobody's that I know of. None of my brothers are killers.
You wouldn't know if they were, so don't discount it yet. Don't discount it yet.
Right,
everyone's
exactly.
always surprised. Everyone's always surprised. I have to keep asking this question because all my listeners will be like, okay, Janet, stop asking her if her parents are still together. But they're not.
They're not. They split when I was 13, and that was huge, traumatic, and a big time for. And I was the youngest.
Yeah. How old were your brothers when they split up?
So I was 13. My brothers were 15, 17, 19, and 20.
So two of them, were they still, was everyone still in the house? Or were two,
me
a couple
and
of them?
My youngest brother were still in the house. Everyone else was at college, or my middle brother was about to go to college. So,
and this is still in Michigan?
Mm-hmm.
Where in Michigan?
Just outside of Detroit, about 30 miles outside of Detroit. In New Baltimore, Michigan, home of the famous Fish Fly Festival. So,
well, I don't think an episode's gone by when I haven't brought up the Fish Fly Festival.
They're fascinating. I get it.
Never heard of it. Don't know anything about it. Don't even know what that is. What's a Fish Fly Festival?
You want to know?
I do.
This is fascinating. It's kind of fascinating. I find it fascinating. Look, I lived on a bay, and there are certain, mostly rivers and lakes in the world that have this certain type of larvae that create mayflies. They call them mayflies. They basically live dormant on algae in the water all year round and then rise to the surface usually in May. But in our circumstance, or you know, in our little town, they rose to the surface in June. And they would... become these little flies that smelled like fish, and they would hover and kind of take over the entire town, like cover the entire town. When you were driving your car, it sounded like you were driving on snow because you were driving on fish flies.
What?
And they took over the town for usually around 2 weeks. They would just cover, and basically you would go out. If you went outside, you would have to, before you came inside again, you would have to get de-fish flied because you'd have fish flies.
Oh my God, I can't believe this is just a normal thing that if you're in that climate and in that part of the world, it's just like a part of life.
Part of life, plus we're Michiganders, so we don't have much summertime to begin with, so we're not going to stay indoors or go away.
I ain't going to let no fish fly keep me from having a good time.
We're going to celebrate it. to the point where we have a festival, crown a queen, a fish fly festival queen. We have a parade. We have like all these unregulated, terrible rides come in and these carnival people put on this big carnival. We have a beer tent. I mean, we do it.
Oh, my God. And that is the most questionable honor to be the fish fly festival queen I can possibly imagine.
Dude, I always wanted to be the fish fly queen, the queen of Bayorama. That's what they call it, okay. The Bayorama Fish Fly Festival. And it was, and we said Bayorama, not Bayrama, because we're from Michigan. So we were like, are you going to the Bayorama? Let's get up there. Let's go on the, you know, the roller coaster. Well, there was no roller coaster. We got to get on that Ferris wheel. It was.
I love everything that's happening right now.
Yeah, it was perfect. But the thing is that I, you know, from the ages of 0 to 18, I just took that as every town in America had something like that. That just happened. Fish flies were everywhere because that's all I knew. And then I left and spent a summer away because I was in college or something and realized it doesn't happen anywhere else. It doesn't happen really anywhere else, just a few little pockets of the world. So it's crazy that the idiosyncrasies of the geographical place that you grow up, like how it informs you and how what it does for you, but also that nobody else can understand that. It's just a weird specific thing. And everybody, I have that thing with everybody that I grew up with. We grew up with fish flies. And that was our summer.
Fish fly yourself.
Yeah, you'd have to go. You'd want somebody to come out if you were alone. You'd want somebody to come out and say, "Can you get the fish flies off me?"
That is so amazing. Were there like was there like on the banners? Was there like, I mean, were there flies like depicted? Like cute, yeah, like a cute little fly.
Totally. I think it was probably called Frankie the Fly, or Fish Fly, sure, or something like that. And he had really big bug eyes. And I'll send you a picture of what they look like. It's very strange, but the entire town smelled like dead fish because these things. And here's the thing: they rise to the surface, they cover the town, and they don't eat. They don't have mouths. What they do for a day? They only live for a day, 24 hours. All they do is procreate, so that they can lay more eggs into the bay, and they lay dormant for the next year until they rise to the surface. So it's this lovely cyclical thing. So they fuck for a day,
oh my God.
Then die, smell like fish, and we celebrate it.
I love it.
Yeah.
I love it.
And it's the one.
Do I want to go experience it for myself? I don't think so.
You do.
I don't know. There are things that I hear about that I think to myself, I would like to put that on. I'm not going to say the bucket list. And your bucket list, by the way, I hope you're fulfilling in every way, because it could be that this podcast is the last thing you do.
Right.
I don't know that I don't know that this makes it. This might be something I just want to hear about anecdotally. I don't know if I need to have flies picked off of me.
Oh, but to have said, like, I had the experience. And they don't, like, yeah, there's something really actually very sweet about them. And I'll tell you, it's the thing I miss the most about.
Oh.
But it was a big part of my childhood, like riding your bike up to Bayorama and Penny Candy, getting some candy,
and
a bag
that way
of candy
of the special ways, to your point, of marking time in a very specific, unique community way that you don't even realize, like you said, is
that special.
Like I associate, there are three memories that have come up for me based on the three things you said. Number one is a non-insect related memory, which is that our version of that, the best I can offer up, is in Tucson, was the U of A, the University of Arizona, had something called the Spring Fling every spring, where they would bring in rickety, unregulated. It was like a fundraiser for the university. And that was really, really fun because you know, Arizona doesn't have like amusement parks, you know, people,
right.
There's no like Disney, there's no Disneyland. There's no, there's like a water park. There's a water park outside of Tucson. That's really it. And so, so getting to ride on a ride, I mean, I was lucky because my dad, we had family and friends who lived out here. So we would go to Disneyland once a year or sometimes twice, but you know, by and large, that's it. It's really exciting when the circus comes to town or the carnival or however you want to think of it. And so I have very positive memories of that. And it is a way of marking seasons in a different way than, you know, you would without those things coming into town. The other thing that it reminded me of is how much I enjoy or enjoyed, it's gotten too crowded now, but the screenings at the Hollywood Forever Cemetery that they do in the summer are now so, so overcrowded that I just can't get into it because it's like the line to get into the, it's great, you know, the cemetery. And, but for those of you who don't know, which I don't know why you would unless you live in LA, but the Hollywood Forever Cemetery is this great historic Hollywood cemetery in the middle of town. And there are a lot of famous people there. I think at least a couple of the Ramones are buried there. Mm-hmm. And there's this giant mausoleum. And in the summer they have, you know, you can bring a picnic and they project old movies, not necessarily all old, but classics.
I saw Pee-wee's Big Adventure.
Pee-wee's Big. And that is when it gets crazy. The Pee-wee fans turn out. But I've seen some Like It Hot there and like The Apartment. And it's, I tried to go to ones that were a little bit less frenzied in terms of fans, because once you get into like The Shining is playing at the cemetery, then, you know, everyone is going,
you're not getting in.
Yeah. So, but what this brought up for me is that, I don't know if you've been there in June, but in June, the June bugs who bury themselves in the ground in the cemetery, come up when the sun starts to go down. And so there's a DJ that plays before the movie starts, before the sun goes down, as everyone's settling in and eating their snacks and drinking their wine and whatever. And in, during the month of June, and I haven't been the last year or two, maybe 2 years. So maybe this, something's changed. I mean, global warming is very real. So I don't trust any weather patterns or any like old traditions anymore with nature. But the DJ would have to like turn down the music and say, all right, everybody, just want to, for those of you who don't know, it's June bug season. So for the next like 10 minutes or so, there are going to be these little copper colored beetles coming up out of the ground. They're going to flit around. Some of them might get in your hair and stuff. But they're perfectly harmless. Just try to stay out of the way, you know, let them do their thing. And then they'll go up and have their night because they're nocturnal. And so I sort of love that. And that sort of sounds familiar. Yeah, like if you didn't know that to be a thing, you would go, ew, that's so weird.
Yeah.
And then the other thing for me with, Tucson, and I don't know if this is true. I actually don't really know if this is true elsewhere, but in Tucson, in terms of weird things that you do, we have cicadas, every summer, which is one of my least favorite sounds. Because I associate it with being trapped inside, still too hot, and it's too hot to do anything, and it's summer break, but you can't do anything because it's too hot, which is such a, it's like, what a tease that you don't have to go to school, but you don't want to do anything else because it's too hot. But the cicadas shed their skin at a certain point in cicada season, and they leave these perfectly preserved, like kind of translucent shells that are still attached to the tree bark, because it literally looks like a see-through bug. It's like a skeleton, and that includes the little legs. It sheds its own skin.
Everything.
So they're just these little six spiny legs still attached. And so that's one thing that you would do when you were bored in the summer, is you would go around and just collect cicada shells, and then you would grind them all into a dust. Like at the end, you'd be like, ah, and then you would just like grind them all up, and the dust would fly away.
There's got to be cicada skin art.
I'm sure you're right, and I don't know why I'm not Googling it.
There's got to be an art. You need to buy some cicada skin art.
I got
to
write this down.
There has to be somebody in Tucson who's like, I can make a wonderful,
bronzed cicada, right. Like the way you can get like gold dipped, like leaves,
totally
aspen leaves and stuff.
Cicadas.
I'm writing this down. Cicada shell
art?
Question mark. I say this almost every podcast now, but Jules, it runs our Pinterest account, and she will take all of the stuff that we talk about and find visuals to accompany it. So there will be like a Kathleen Rose Perkins board, Pinterest board that has all of this different stuff. So there will be pictures of, I'm assuming, fish flies, mayflies, and now probably cicadas and quail, and I don't know how she's going to, quail eggs, I'm sure. No need, Jules, to like
eggs,
depict periods.
A fried egg. Just knowing.
Yeah. No need to find like a tampon.
Yeah.
You don't have to worry about that.
Note to, yeah. Don't do it. Do not.
So your parents divorced. So your parents divorced when you were 13.
All right. Yeah. I just thought about it. Okay. Go on. This is bad. I'm not even going to say it because then I'll sound really gross. So let's just keep going.
I don't know if we can get any grosser, but it's been, but I guarantee you it's been a joy for everyone involved. At least I hope it has.
Yeah. Well, we'll see.
We will see. So your parents split when you were as a baby with you and your brother living in the house when you were 13, which is exactly the age that we talk about when we talk about some of the history part of the podcast, which is, you know, you being an adolescent, hormones are raging, probably getting ready to start high school in a year or so. And your parents are like, and by the way, your life is about to drastically change because we're getting a divorce.
Yeah. And I think that like my version of it, up until, well, I started going to full on individual therapy for the last 4 years. So up until I started therapy, I really kind of thought about it as like, it was kind of a lovely time for me because I was 13. So I was really self-involved, and I was living in a house that was full on male dominated. I have four older brothers. My dad, they all were like full on sports. It was all sports, 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 sports. And I had really no say. Like, I whispered all of my words the first 5-6 years of my life because I just had no voice at all. So, when I was 13 and just discovering boys and not really being able to have like a boyfriend because I would be utterly humiliated by my brothers, you know, and
did your brother's friends ever like,
hey, oh, Kathleen. I wanted them to, but no, I had crushes on every single one of my brother's friends. Like they'd have at least one friend who I was like, oh, he's so dreamy.
Yeah.
but no, nobody was like, I was not necessarily a tomboy, but kind of like not a goofy kid either, but just not, I wasn't like this hot little sister. That's for sure.
Right. Right.
It was kind of the perfect time to go away with my mother into this little condominium down the street in the same town and get away from this maleness and then just go create a little home with my mother, a female home that's got like, you know, ribbons and pink and all that kind of stuff. And I relished in it. And I always thought that it was a really easy time for me. Subsequently in theater, in therapy, which is basically the same
thing. Interesting.
I realized that, yeah, it was a traumatic thing, and I kind of had to, I had to spin it. I was a spin doctor and had to think of it as only a good thing because otherwise, it would have been too, traumatic of an event to experience as a 13-year-old girl. So that's how I looked at it. And
that
now,
totally makes sense.
Yeah. And now since kind of, and I think that I really could only deal with it in my 30s. And that's when it came up. And that's how I've been able to process it.
And that doesn't mean that you don't have to. And that doesn't mean that all of the positive stuff that you took from it goes away. It doesn't. Like,
no,
like
not at all
of the stuff you just described does sound like that's the upside, you
it
know,
really
and you really
was.
Celebrated the upside. And that's what you focused on for one
and
reason
I think
or another.
That's the only way I could survive it if I just went, this is great, this is awesome, I can't wait, I hate boys, I hate living with my brothers, but now I can process the loss of the relationship with my father, the relationship with my brothers at the time, and how it affected my relationships. And
also, how was your mom? I mean, was she sort of in the same space as you, like, we're gonna do this together? Like,
she I learned that spinning from her. Yeah. That she was like, she was desperate to know, to justify her choice, because she's the one who asked to leave. She's the one who said, I can't take this anymore. And she wanted to become this independent woman. So, you know, from the ages of 13 to 18, she was like, we don't need a man. It was all about like,
sisters are doing it for themselves.
And we're going to do it, and we're going to take over, and we're going to, and she was desperate to prove that to herself and to her daughter. And, that fucked me up in a certain way.
Well, how did that affect your experience with guys for that time period when, you know, when as a straight teenage girl, to kind of be in that space where like now you might be able to start having like, I don't know. I mean, I had boyfriends when I was little, but you know, that's sort of like as you're really sort of experimenting with like what you think of as grown up romance, right, kind of stuff and sex kind of stuff.
I was really bad at it. I made some bad choices. There, you know, that's when you start experimenting with drugs too. And I didn't do anything more than smoke a little weed. But alcohol was big in my community and in my at the time in my high school. And so there was always alcohol around, and that will screw a kid up too. And the great thing is, and I also started hanging out around with the wrong ladies, bad girls. I was arrested for shoplifting when I was 14 years old.
I knew I sensed that kindred spirit in you.
Yeah, crazy.
I was a mess.
I was a little bit of a mess.
But it was fun, but I was a mess.
Right?
But it was fun.
It was both.
I always say this, I don't want to encourage, you know, I do have some young listeners and I never want to encourage you to make bad choices, but I also don't want to lie to you and say like, sure, was it fun? Sure. Would I go back and do it the same? I would, because I'm the person that I am.
Yeah.
But
oh, you know,
that doesn't mean like your parents are worried about you for a reason.
If I could go back, I would change probably two things. I really, really would.
Yeah.
I'd love
that's good
to change
know.
A couple of things.
Yeah.
But you're right. I am who I am because of those things too. So it's a kind of double-edged sword.
Would you want to see someone else do it or go through it? And that's what I try to connect with, because I don't have kids. And I feel so connected to that person that I was. And I don't know if I always wonder about, you know, my friends who have teenage kids. I'm so curious if they feel more connected to their teenage selves or way further away, because now they have this perspective of being a parent and all of the years leading up to being a teenager. All I know is that I just feel so close to the person that I was when I was a teen. And so I try to sort of, in the volunteer work I do or whatever too, is like, just try to help bridge the gap in some way and go, listen, I totally get why you're making all the choices you're making, and no one can tell you not to, and you're going to make them anyway, whatever they end up being. But just know that there's a reason that your parents are worried about you, and it's like that. It's like, I wouldn't change the choices that I made, but there's no way that my drug use didn't create a lot of problems for myself emotionally later. And I'm sort of wear
paying
them as a
it.
Badge of honor in a way, because I do, I'm proud of the work that it's caused me to have to do and stuff, but I would never want anybody else to go through it. And that's what your parents guys are thinking, or maybe you're not. And those of you who are parents who listen to the podcast, you can tell me if I'm wrong, but I just think that there's the element of that, which is that when you fiercely love someone, you don't want them to have to learn the same kind of mistakes in the same kind of hard way.
Them to go through any pain, and there was a lot of pain involved with making those kind of choices. But you're right. It's I don't know anybody who hasn't gone through it, and I don't know that it's necessarily. You know what? My boyfriend Christopher, he's never been a drinker. He like tried it once and decided he really hated that feeling and never got into the taste, because it is an acquired taste. You have to get over the hump. And he was so confident in a way at a very young age that he never really kind of gave into it. So And I think he also had people in his family that were really like, he saw what it did to certain people that were really close to him in a bad way, that it kind of really, really hurt them. So he made that choice, and up until still now, he's a non-drinker, and he never had to learn that lesson. And that's just how he had to go. But some people can kind of learn by other people's mistakes, and then some people
have
to learn their own ways. And I think that if I could, you know, I think that this is lovely what you're doing, is sharing experience, especially for women in that age, sharing that experience is the only way that you can get through to anybody, to try and teach them or to tell them or to help them not make mistakes or to help them avoid pain. Yeah. I think that's the best way to do it, is to just share your own story.
And that goes for, that's what's been so great about this, and what I think, you know, we all respond to in our friendships and our relationships throughout our lives and our adulthood, is that you still seek answers in the same way, and you still feel like super miserable on some days and like you're on top of the world on the next. And like, to feel like that sense of community where people who like talking about the fact that they all feel that way is stretches so far beyond adolescence that it's just like perennial, you know, it's something that we can all continue to grow out of and through.
Oh, it's such a relief too.
Right? It's such a relief
to hear that. Oh, I'm not the only idiot. I know. I'm not the only stupid, you know, the only one who makes mistakes. Everybody does some really selfish, stupid, idiotic stuff. And it's okay. It's okay. It's okay. And it's okay to not judge them. And not judge yourself.
Yeah.
And just learn from it.
I did the segment on HuffPost Live a while ago that I might have talked about on the podcast before, but I just pitched this idea because I was reading this article about self-esteem versus self-compassion. And there's just like a little bit of stuff like floating around in the kind of self-help ether about, which obviously has a very bad attachment to it. And I'm, as a person in the comedy community, I've made, you know, done my share of making horrible fun of it.
Yeah.
But you know, this idea of self-esteem sort of being dangerous in the sense that sometimes you can forget to be compassionate because you're so busy trying to always feel great about yourself that it becomes like, oh, I screwed up. And somehow the compassion doesn't kick in. It's more like, I'm supposed to feel great about who I am all the time and be confident. And that's how like good things, I'm going to attract great things to me because I always feel like I'm the best person in the world. And I read this, even just like a comment from someone, I think, who had read the article, who was like, it took me a really long time to realize that I'm not great in groups. I'm not great socially. I'm not great talking about myself. And, some of those things that people would say, she seems to have low self-esteem because I'm not comfortable, I'm shy in a group. Guess what? I'm self-compassionate and I feel really good about the person that I am. And part of that is about acknowledging that, like, that's not my thing.
Yeah.
My thing isn't to be outspoken and, like, you know, friendly and like to talk to everybody. Like, it takes all kinds of different people to make a balanced world, and that there are some qualities that people have that kind of go against what we like classically define as self-esteem and or confidence, and that we need to be better about understanding that, you know, our differences and our flaws and our willingness to acknowledge our flaws and be compassionate about our flaws are the only way that we're going to continue to like move forward and grow as people.
Yeah, they can be accepted and also not rank you as like, oh, that person is better than me because they're wittier and they're quippier. They can come up with a wonderful quip, or they're great in a room and they can kind of just hold a you know, an audience. Some people are just not that way, but that. It's okay to not be that way.
And the person who is putting that off is actually masking like the most intense self-loathing ever. You never know.
You never know. They could, or
or they couldn't. Whatever. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Exactly. Yeah.
So when you were in high school, were you outspoken? I know you were hanging out with the bad girls. Were you sort of like a follower in the bad girls, or was there sort of like was there an equilibrium in power, or was there like a leader? You know what I mean?
Okay, here's the thing. In fifth grade, I was in Mr. Campo's class, and my, the most popular girl in school was Dawn Kaptrowski. She was gorgeous. She had lots of money. Her family had lots of money, and she was like the coolest girl in school. And I made her laugh because she would ask me, about like for my homework. I was the nerd who had great homework, and she would kind of ask for my help with math or something, and I would just make her laugh during hanging out with her for that. One day at lunch, she was like, "Hey, Kathy," because I was known as Kathy back then, "come on over and, you know, sit with us." It was like just right out of a movie. Oh, right, mister? I got your cat is about ready to...
Yeah, she's
Missy, I'm sorry.
She's... Well, that's okay. She's not going to lay any eggs to give you the clue that she's female, but she is female.
That would be crazy if she did. She asked me over, and I was like, "Oh, I don't have my homework with me. I don't have my book with me." And she was like, "No, just to hang out." And I was like, "Oh my God, I made it.
I'm in the A crowd. Yeah.
And then I just started hanging out with the most popular girls in school. But I was kind of like their crony. I was the goofy clown.
Like,
that
we
made
let
them
you
laugh.
In. We're
yeah,
great because we
you
let
can
you
be
into
cute
this.
And but we're the ones who get the guys and stuff.
Yeah.
And are pretty and all that stuff. And then in eighth grade, when we went to our like last dance of the year, I got this pretty dress, and my brother's girlfriend at the time knew how to do great makeup, so she did my makeup and my hair, and I went all dolled up, and I felt so good about myself, and I would just talk to boys and flirt a little bit, and I was like coming out of my shell. I was becoming, you know, a sexual being, or, you know, yeah, whatever. And I remember Dawn and this girl named Lisa kind of the next day at lunch. I was about to start eating my lunch, which was a piece of chicken. I remember distinctly. And they came to my table and they said, "We need to talk to you." And they got so serious, and they said, I remember the thing that I remember the most is like, "We think that you're, it's cute, it's sweet that you're kind of like, you know, you put some makeup on and you're kind of thinking that you're, you know, but you're getting a little too big for your own britches." Oh. I remember that. And I remember picking at the chicken because I was so angry I couldn't eat. And so there was all of that dynamic happening of me trying to come to become a fully realized, start to become a fully realized woman, or, you know, or a girl, a young woman or something. And you have all these people around you dictating how you're going to do that, including your friends, people that you thought were your friends. So it was weird. It's, you know, I don't even know why I started telling that story. What was the question?
We were just talking about sort of like how you came off to people and sort of how you were thought of and, you know, the way in which you were social in,
yeah,
when you were in high school and stuff.
Oh, so
but like, wow, crippling to have. We've talked about, you know, so many of us have had experiences like
to
that too,
keep
where
you down,
to
keep
just
you
have
in your
that
place.
Weird, and that's like the more sort of passive bullying, that sort of passive aggressive, like. The people who were bullied who are socially ostracized outside a group, and then the people who were bullied inside of their own social circle, and they're both just, oh,
and it was
so
all
painful.
Masked in this, like, "We're looking out for you. You don't want to change that much. You really are, you know, we like you the way you are. Don't be going, getting too crazy, different and flirty and all that kind of stuff." And I was, but so... So that's a, because these are girls that I really looked up to. They were the most popular girls. They were the ones that let me into their crowd. And so I, to deal with that information, it happened to be the same year that my parents split too. So in eighth grade was a big year for me. I was starting to become really interested in boys and trying to get them interested in me, and then having friends going, "Don't even think that you can do that, because we hold that part of this court," you know?
Yeah.
And And then my mom going, you don't need a man. You don't need a man. So then like from age 14 to 18, I was like, I would date a guy, find somebody that was interested in me and I was interested in them. And after 4 weeks, I would grow sick of them. Like I would feel nauseous if they came around because my mind was saying, you don't need a man, you know, all of this stuff of like, I'm going to have to do certain things with them that like it will lead to sex. And that's a scary thing. And I had a traumatic experience. Like I lost my virginity when I was 14 and I didn't really mean to. it was not full on. I wasn't fully on raped, but it just wasn't the way. I was not ready. And I never got, because my mom and dad were going through so much turmoil in their relationship, I never really got the talk about sex or how to deal with it. And I was the only girl in the household. So all the information I got was from listening, overhearing my brothers, which my brothers were trying to lose it quick.
Yeah.
And that's what boys did, especially around other boys. They were like, I'm going to fuck that. You know, it was a whole different thing. And I thought maybe that's just how I'm supposed to just get it done. Yeah. It's not. And that guy tried to do it. And I was like, okay. And then So after, because that was 14.
Is that one of the things that you would change?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I would. I would have had my mom sit me down and talk to me and really kind of like focus in on me and my development. I would have made her do that. And I wouldn't have gotten myself in that situation if I could have changed that. That would have been great. But it didn't happen like that. So I have to kind of deal with the way it happened. And subsequently, the 4 years after that, I didn't have sex again until I was 18 years old. And that was a whole other ball game of crazy. So but that's my experience. And it's something that I have always wanted because I have nieces that are, you know, 17, 16 and 14 right now. And they're going through it. They're going through it. And I so desperately want to kind of tell them my experience and just lay it all on the line and try and just not tell them to follow or not do what I did or follow in somebody else's footsteps or follow in my footsteps, any of that. I just want to share with them so they can, I think knowledge is power. Information is power, not just book knowledge, but experience knowledge. I think it can only empower a young woman to hear what it's like to go through. And I hate that we kind of like hide it and we don't share it enough. I think every young girl should be told by their mother about vibrators. I think a vibrator is a lovely thing.
I couldn't agree more. Everything you're saying is music to my ears.
What an empowering thing to pleasure yourself and to find that so empowering. And I didn't get my first vibrator until I was in my mid-20s, late 20s, and that sucks. I wish I would have had it. I mean, I read a book by this lovely woman named Sark. I don't know if you're in.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, she just did that color, that watercolor books that she was an artist plus a writer.
I have the one that's like something magenta, something that I just love, and I can't remember what it's called, but it's nearby somewhere too. Like I feel like we've already like discussed half of the things on my bookshelf by accident.
Yeah, she's amazing, and she had a whole chapter in the first book that I read about her by her saying, "Get a vibrator. Vibrators are great." And I love it. They are. There's nothing wrong with it.
I couldn't agree more. And I think to your point, pre-vibrator, but also including vibrator, is that it is, it's a much, it's not about telling someone else, telling anyone else, be it, you know, somebody who's your peer, somebody who's your, in your, in a relationship with, somebody who's your child, somebody who your mentor, anybody, your nieces, that you're not telling them something so that you are somehow able to like fill up a needle full of, you know what I mean? Fill up a vial full of your information and just inject it into their veins and now they're good to go. It's about expressing yourself so that they learn in turn, A, how to express themselves back to other people so that they can have that community and sense of sharing and support, but also to really, we're all trying. I feel like so many of us are trying to just be better about listening to ourselves.
Yeah.
What's my internal voice saying? Am I ready to have sex with this person? Am I not? It's okay if I'm not. It's okay if I am. But to be authentic in that way and to sort of really trust the relationship that you have to your mind and to your heart. And I think that it's really hard to do that. It's hard to internalize in that kind of a healthy way. It's really easy to internalize in a kind of anxious, you know, self-critical way, but it's hard to internalize in a really loving, compassionate way and to like ask yourself questions and to sit with your feelings and to be honest about them.
Absolutely. And I also think that like, talking and sharing can only create support communities, like positive communities among women. I would love to share these experiences with my niece because I want them to feel comfortable with sharing with me their experiences. And I want to support and uplift them because I just don't think that, I don't know if that's innate or maybe it is innate, but maybe society doesn't really want, like there's just so much competition between women that can really kind of deflate that possibility, not allow for women to just go, I had this experience, and then go, oh shoot, I had a very similar experience. And God, I wish that we could have like, I love that we can talk and feel like we're normal people and it's all pain and it's all wonderful. And there's a lot of fear in the world and everything's okay. Like, wouldn't it be great if we could all just kind of do this, what we're doing right now on and so it's only been because of the therapy that I've had to combat all of these stuff that's come up in my 30s, based off of what I experienced 20 years prior. In the last few years, I've cultivated these amazing relationships with four or five strong, amazing women in my age group. And, I don't think I never did that before this. It's imperative to me to have these strong relationships, female relationships. It never was before. I was always kind of real friendly with guys, and that doesn't work for me anymore. I need the female point of view.
I totally agree, and support what you're saying by also saying, and I know that your experience was different with, you know, you moving out with your mom, but like her kind of needing to focus on her stuff because she was going through divorce and all of that. So I don't know where that comes from for you necessarily, although I have a sense of it from what you've told me up to this point. But, and you know, your comfort with guys because you were around more guys than girls in your family relationships. And my dad and I were very close, I've always had good girlfriends, agreed. But I think for me, same thing, like in the last sort of like maybe for me 10 years, but I really had huge trust issues with women. You know, I did everything that you're describing. Mine was, you know, because of my mom, because we just had a really bad relationship when I was little. And it breaks my heart to say that. I wish it weren't true because I know I'm responsible for part of that also. You know, I was a kid, but I still feel responsible. And so I think I really had trust issues with women. I just was worried about trusting them.
Yeah.
And I found it very easy to trust guys, like as friends. You know, I'm not saying, you know, that I was like, you know, just throwing all my trust at like a relationship, but really, really strong friendships with men, and I value them all so much, but that's very comfortable for me. And it took me a long time to sort of understand how thirsty I was for that relationship with women, for that just like trust and acceptance and lack of competition and lack of feeling judged and just feeling instead feeling really seen and understood in a way that maybe you can only share with your own gender, you know?
Oh, and the support that is possible, the, like the cheerleading, the, you know, the, you can get a fan out of a friend. That for another woman to be like, I have this amazing friend who's just so, so supportive. So I, you know, when I call her, she's like, she will just, it's unbelievable. And I think that it, when you hear that kind of support from your same gender, you believe it a little bit more, or you trust it a little bit more.
Yeah, I do. I mean, there is something different about
it. If they can get over the competition or the, you know, like, I want her to feel bad so I can feel good type of thing, because I think that's kind of innately, or no, it's not innate,
but it is so pervasive.
It's taught.
Yeah.
I think we're supposed to be competitive within our own gender. And when you can hear support from another woman, I believe it that much more than I do from a man, because from a man, I have to believe there's a slight agenda to get in my pants.
There may be.
If a woman can tell me that I'm beautiful, I believe it that much more. Mm. I don't know why, but that's just kind of, it just carries more weight for some reason. Mm. And I'll tell you, I'll take it wherever I can get it, because in this world, it just doesn't happen enough. People are mean. People cut down too much. I think when people can build people up, that's where I want to be. Those are the people that I want to be around. Yeah. And you know, I also grew up in a household full of boys that they tend to tease each other. There's a lot of teasing. My dad was a phys ed teacher and a coach. So it was all about competition, sport competition, life competition. Are you as good as your brother? Are you as, you know, we'll beat you, the two against us, you know, two against two. There was so much shit slung in my family, and teasing and poking fun, and it was all in good fun, but it felt terrible, and I can't stand it. I really don't love it now. So the idea of building someone up and complimenting people, I love it. I love it.
It is. It's like a delicious meal. It's just like a beautiful, delicious meal that you're like, I'm going to treasure this.
And how beautiful is it when you meet somebody? I have a tendency lately to really just immediately compliment somebody that I meet, like just whether it's say, oh my God, I love that scarf. The lighting up that happens is priceless.
It costs nothing,
but it gets you so far. And I don't mean like to use it in a way to get things, but like to immediately just let them feel comfortable and let them feel good about themselves. It just relaxes a person.
I think so too.
It's just so much easier to be in a social situation when people are relaxed and not trying to prove themselves. And everybody knows LA is all about everybody's trying to prove themselves everywhere.
Yeah.
I feel that way all the time. And it's a real hard thing to try and repress or to deal with. So how wonderful is it when you kind of can walk into a situation just socially, go, you're awesome. Oh my God, you're so beautiful.
Yes, yes.
And then they go, oh, thanks. And they're your best friend.
Good to
and
go.
Everything's fine. Yeah. Yeah.
I totally agree. I'm looking down at the binder because we are, we've closed in on our time frame, and Kathleen brought this. She brought a binder of some things that she's organized from through her life. I invited her if she had anything from when she was an adolescent that she maybe wanted to read, something that she wrote, anything like that, to bring with her. And she did. And I'm wondering if you want, you totally don't have to, we can another episode another time where we focus on that kind of stuff too, but
no.
I would love to hear from 15-year-old Kathleen, or however you were old you were when you read that. That'd be beautiful.
This is my first poem, and I wrote it. Yeah, it's a doozy. Get ready. And
I love it.
Listen, I can't believe that I told you that when I lost my virginity. I can't believe I mentioned the period eggs. And now, I mean, this is, you took a lot out of me, and now I cannot believe that I'm sharing this with you, because this is really embarrassing.
Well, if you change your mind about anything, we can edit it out, but I love it, and that's what this is all about.
It's embarrassing, and you know what, though? That's the other thing, is if I'm not willing to share, even with people that are strangers, there's nothing... It's ultimately not embarrassing. It's not something that I am who I am, and part of those experiences made me who I am. So I'm not gonna now.
And side note, nobody is gonna read their 14-year-old poetry and go, "I was great.
Listen, that was
this is
amazing.
The best work I've ever done." How sad would that be? What if you read that poem and you were
"That's when you peaked."
I have never. Yeah, I am not.
I'll never get close to what I was.
I should quit now.
No, I think I'm getting better with age. Okay, definitely.
I think you probably are.
You'll see.
We're going to do that, and then we're going to do one other quick thing, and then we're going to call it a podcast.
This is my first poem that I ever wrote, and it was in an English class when I was in, I believe I was 12 years old. 12 years old.
Okay, I'm really excited about this.
Mind you, it's titled Death.
Okay. She's ready for it, ladies and gentlemen.
Death by Kathy Perkins. And this is the page, this is the paper that I wrote it in. This is my original.
I'm seeing it.
This
I can see it. I want to say it's a little yellow with age. It's like a parchment.
Bubbly. It is a piece of parchment paper.
Great. But it's also, don't worry guys, it's also just regular school paper with blue lines.
Yeah, and bubbly writing.
It is bubbly writing. God, that makes it even better. Maybe I'll take a snap. Maybe I can take a snapshot of the bubbly writing to put on the website.
I will. Yeah, you're going to want to after this. Death, after you hear this.
Death by Kathy Perkins.
All right. Death. Oh, wait, I read that wrong. This is...
I'm going to start over. Death
I'm gonna start over.
By
take
Kathy
two,
Perkins.
Two. Death? Because there's a question mark.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah, thank you. Death? Is it peaceful, beautiful, or kind? Do you leave your body but take your mind? Why hasn't anyone found out what death is? And tell people awaiting... Telling people lying in their hospital beds decaying. Even telling people healthy and fine, but having something horrible hiding inside. Like a heart attack, an ulcer, or even anxiety. So I guess ulcers create death. Okay. Anyways. Ooh, this is the best line. Get ready. Like a heart attack, an ulcer, or even anxiety. I want an answer, not a lie. I want reality.
I'm trying so hard not to laugh because this is the best thing that's ever happened to me.
Two exclamation points
but
after reality.
But this is really good still.
I'm not done. Does anyone on this planet know? No. Well... I will live my life one day at a time, but I hope I am not one to have something evil inside. The end.
Oh my God, I love it.
I wrote the end.
I love it,
too.
But that's super existential. You were like in it already at 12. You were thinking.
Yeah, I gave it to my teacher and I remember.
Really?
Yes.
I just want to see the bubbly writing.
Yeah.
Should I take a picture of it?
Yeah. Okay. Go for it. I gave it to my teacher thinking, oh man, this is not really interesting or important or deep or I don't know, whatever. And I gave it to him and he read it and was like a little bit shocked, a little bit like taken aback. Not because it was good or that it was, you know, anything like that. I'm not bragging. It's just, I never presented myself like that. I was this real happy-go-lucky, whatever, everything's fine.
I think he probably was really impressed.
He was like, whoa, she's thinking about some real dark shit.
I think that's amazing. I'm stunned by that.
There
All right.
you go.
That was amazing. And I'm very proud of little Kathy Perkins for asking the tough questions. I hope that none of you have anxiety or an ulcer or what was the other one?
Heart attack.
Heart attack.
It is interesting that a heart attack and then an ulcer can cause death or anxiety. Ooh, ding, ding, bingo, bingo. What's that say?
What was going on with you?
Freudian.
We're going way lighter. We're going from death to playing the game MASH.
Oh, what's that?
let me draw that for you, and then you can tell me if it looks familiar.
Okay. Narrating.
Did you ever play...
Watch
something
the
that
show?
Looked like
Does
this.
Does it have anything to do?
No.
Oh, yeah.
This is mansion, apartment, shack, house.
Okay.
So yeah. This is for if you were still 15 years old. It doesn't have to be if you're 15 years old. It could be like you would have picked if you had been like, I want to be, you know, I would pick, you know, I'm trying to think of anyone. Like I would pick Bono or whatever, yeah. You know, back then. Or it can be like, Kathleen is transformed into single girl who gets to just pick any famous person she wants from history or whatever marry. And then we will find out how many kids you have, what kind of car you drove, like all that kind of stuff. So we're going to do some fortune telling here.
Can I also say that somebody from my high school just posted on Facebook these books that they used to have of all these students. So they'd have your picture and then they'd have like a questionnaire. And she posted the page of me, little Kathy Perkins at the age of 13.
Oh.
And I'll tell you, my favorite car back then apparently was a Ferrari.
Yes.
My favorite bands, but it was listed as groups, but I guess we just called them groups
back
then.
Yeah, I think
then.
That seems
the bands
right.
were Whitesnake and... Poison.
You love the hair bands.
Loved them. And
or you thought someone else wanted you to think they were cool, so you said that you thought that they were.
That this is the one that indicates I was trying to be cool. My favorite subject in school, lunch.
Smart ass.
I was like,
by the way, you were a nerd who helped tutor other kids.
Big nerd. Big
That's
nerd.
Hilarious. Always had, trying so hard
yeah,
to be.
Yeah, from the ages, from second grade on up, I was.
Oh, man. All right, nerd. you just gave me an idea. okay, so give me three guys that you might end up married to.
Wait, am I talking for my 15
could be
year
any,
old self?
It could be whatever you want. Other than that, like, we know that you've picked Christopher, so we're good on that.
But, oh,
like,
okay.
It could be, like, you love, you know,
Paul
David
Newman.
Lynch. Oh, there we go.
Jon Bon Jovi.
Love it.
And Jimon Hansu. Do you know who that
I'm
is?
I'm afraid that I don't know who that is.
Did you ever see Amistad?
Oh,
the
yes.
big, beautiful black
he is
man.
Gorgeous.
Who give us yeah. us free.
Yeah.
He's
like Idris Elba.
He's gorgeous.
I'm obsessed by.
Yeah.
Idris Elba. Okay, that's great. Yeah. That's fantastic. a city that you live in.
Oh, well, we'll say Rome.
Great.
We will say, like a cool city that I'd like to live in.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Fantasy city. You could be like, the moon.
The moon. the moon. I'm going to go with the moon.
Great.
Why not?
Might be a little lonely, but you can, well, let's assume you have a way to get back to Earth whenever
yeah,
you want to.
Yeah. Let's assume that it's populated and things are happening up on the moon. There's a nightlife and
there's
stuff.
There's a hot nightlife.
Swinging nightlife.
Thank you. Couldn't even think of the word.
And I'm going to go, wait, I said the Rome the moon. Come on. I'm so stupid. I want to go to a place I've never been.
And then live there.
Like I've been to the moon.
The moon. So for the third one, pick a place you've never been, not like the first two.
Oh, no. I'm going to go with my favorite national park, Olympic National Park.
Oh, love it.
Yeah.
Love it. Love everything about it. We had we mutually geeked out about national parks right before the podcast started. Three different pets.
African gray parrot. Mm-hmm. Let's just go there. I'm going to say a greyhound.
Ooh.
And I'm going to go with a tiger.
Great. Love it.
Okay.
These are the right kinds of answers. Now, this is a new addition based on your list that you were just describing. We are going to do cars in a second, but I'm going to say if you could have a band like play for you live whenever you wanted.
When I get married? When you're married. Yeah.
Sure. Could be that.
Oh, a band. Well, Bare Naked Ladies.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Back when they were Bare Naked Ladies with Stephen. I can't remember his last name, but yeah, okay. the whole, you know.
BNL.
Yeah.
Got it.
Well, Jason Mraz is not a band, but he's totally my favorite little singer.
We won't say a group or a band. It could be a person.
And then I'm going to have to go with, like, I got to go with, like, Bon Jovi.
It's going to be interesting if you end up married to him.
That was
and
my
13-year-old right?
self.
Yeah.
Well, it's appropriate then.
We'll find out.
You
might get, you just gave yourself a double chance at having him in your life.
Double
good job.
Whammy.
Super sneaky. Three jobs, anything.
National park ranger.
Love it.
Veterinarian.
Love it.
And I'm just going to say a stay at home wife.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because that is a job, people. Mm-hmm.
That's right. Okay. Love everything that's happening. Love it all. Number of kids.
Oh,
it could include zero.
I'm going to go zero.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, one.
This is what I did my entire life. And I love kids, but my entire life I was like, can it be three zeros? I'm like, it's terrible.
Right?
It's terrible. And I don't feel that way now. I guess I would say zero, one, and two now, but still I would keep zero in there.
Yeah, zero.
I'm a terrible person.
No, you're not.
Zero, one,
hey, you're not. Here's
two.
Another thing. Here's another thing. I'm
know,
a woman
I know.
Who's in my late 30s who wants to not have kids.
That's totally
and
great.
And not get be married.
Totally great. Did a segment about that. Want you to feel, I know. I don't mean that I'm a terrible person, but yeah.
It's just okay to be that person. It's okay to be a woman and not want children. And that's something huge that I had to come to terms with is to be.
That's a good therapy topic.
It's okay. Yeah.
That's a big one.
Trust me. I've been in it.
I'm going to give you zero, zero, and zero if that's, you don't mind. So we're not, you know what? I'm going to take that column out.
No, I want to do five.
Oh, great. Okay.
Because if it's with Paul Newman, I'm fine with making five
zero,
babies.
Zero, five, and how many?
and two.
Okay, great.
No, yeah, two.
Love it.
Yeah.
Love it. Let me just do one more because why not? So I'm just going to come up with something. Car. Forgot.
Oh,
what kind of car?
Car.
You know you have to say Ferrari. You don't have to say Ferrari.
A Ferrari. Yeah, I'd like one of those. And I would like an Aston Martin.
Mm, nice.
And I like the Volt.
Great. Okay, now,
Chevy
tell
Volt.
Me when to stop.
Now?
Great. One,
oh, is this when you did
the
circle?
Okay, here's 10. Yeah, I'm going to pause it real quick, and then when I pick back up, we're going to be, I'm going to reveal your future.
Hold your horses.
Okay, we are finishing up the podcast with the results from your MASH, Kathleen Rose Perkins,
oh, God.
A.K.A. Kathy Perkins, A.K.A. author of the poem Death.
Death.
Question mark. You are... Okay, first of all, you're a stay-at-home wife.
All right.
But you don't have any kids.
I better live in a mansion.
So you're a stay-at-home wife in what I can only imagine is a very nice apartment since you are married to John Bon Jovi.
Okay. All right.
And your apartment is nestled in Olympic National Park.
That's right, bitches.
I knew you'd be happy about that.
Oh.
You, whenever you want, can have Jason Mraz come and play for you.
I'll take it.
And
oh, that's,
you wander.
That's scary for John.
You hike around Olympic Park trying to convince yourself not to cheat on your husband, John Bon Jovi, with Jason Mraz.
Right.
With your greyhound.
Oh, nice.
And sometimes you get in your Aston Martin and you drive somewhere fantastic. That's kind of an amazing and strange life you've just created
for
yourself.
So we really spent the money on the cars, but not so much on the living.
Listen, there are some apartments that I've been to in New York City that are worth millions of dollars.
I bet you the apartments in Olympic National Park are really
you
lovely.
Know it's like an apartment that is
like
just
a tree
has
house.
A super high window. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It's like a beautiful... Oh, it's going to be great.
It's going to be hot.
It's going to be
it's
really
It's
going to
be one
great.
Heck of a life. I can't
like
wait to
quivering greyhound that you've rescued from some horrible circumstance.
And he gets to run around national.
It's great. Come on. It's a great life.
I'll take it.
Thank you so much. This has been such a pleasure.
My pleasure.
A total blast.
Thank you.
I can't wait to come over and meet your birds and foster this friendship.
Absolutely. Me too.
All right, guys. We will talk to you next time on the podcast.
Bye.
As always, the JV Club theme song is Before We Were Brittle, courtesy of the amazing Say Hi.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.